Welcome to Brighttown Broadcast News for Friday, January 5th, 2024. Mike Adams here. Thank you for joining me. I've got a great lineup for you today. The interview today coming up is with an incredibly courageous woman. Her name is Laura Aboli, A-B-O-L-I. And she gave an incredible speech about globalism and depopulation at a recent conference. And I invited her for an interview. We did that interview, right around Christmas time, and have been kind of saving it until after the holidays because I know it's going to be very impactful. You've got to hear this interview. I tell you, Laura's voice is just filled with wisdom and courage and love for humanity. And you're absolutely going to enjoy it. It's not a doom and gloom interview, although we deal with the issues that are affecting us, like, well, the fact that the globalists are trying to exterminate most of human population. But that's not where we end it. Ultimately, this message is very empowering. And that's my message, and that's my strategy as well, is to let you know that you can be very powerful. You are powerful. But I mean, together, we can do incredible things. I believe that the globalists will be ultimately defeated. I think that their depopulation regime will fail. And I know they're going to go crazy with more censorship and more false flags and psyops and government terrorism against the people. They're going to try to start World War III. I mean, I have a report coming up on that. But I think that we will prevail. And I also think that society will change so dramatically in such a positive way after this that people will demand freedom and that people will embrace tools of decentralization in order to achieve that freedom and to realize that they don't need a big government to tell them what to think and how to act and what to do every single day. It's time for humanity to get off its knees and to start thinking for itself. And instead of worshiping, you know, false authority, which is what statism actually is. You know, people who worship the state, worship government authority. Oh, the authorities have to tell us what to think, you know. Those people aren't going to do very well in all of this. And their ideas are obsolete. So a couple of things to bring your attention to in all of this. I posted a new episode of Decentralize TV. And the website for that is decentralize.tv. And the episode is with Richard Grove. It's a great episode. It's entitled Censorship Always Leads to a Monopoly of Violence, featuring Richard Grove with my co-host Todd Pittner. And I also recorded another episode of DTV in the studio a few hours ago with an incredibly brilliant young man named Corey. And we'll be playing that here, I don't know, hopefully soon, perhaps in a few weeks. I can't wait to bring you that message as well, because it really gives me hope to connect with people who are part of freeing humanity. And, you know, technology, I know there are some technophobes out there that want to go full Amish, which is fine. I actually admire the Amish. I admire the Mennonites in their own way to just reject all technology and say, you know, let's live close to the land. Let's live close to God's will in the scripture and let's be really self-sufficient and so on. I totally respect that. But for those of us who live in the world of tech, we have to harness that technology for human freedom, which is exactly what we are doing together. It's some of the projects that I'm working on. That's why I built Brighttown.com and Brighttown.social. If you haven't yet used that, be sure to sign up there. And it's why I'm working on this large language model project right now, which will produce an open source, freely distributable LLM. It's a large language model with special knowledge in nutrition, herbs, off-grid medicine, natural health, permaculture, basically skills for health and nutrition and off-grid living. You'll be able to download that for free and run it locally on your own machine, assuming your local machine has sufficient RAM. And it's not yet clear to me if that's going to be 8 gigabytes of RAM or 16 gigabytes. I'm talking about the onboard RAM, the motherboard RAM, not the graphics card RAM. But most people have at least 8 gigabytes right now. And I think we're going to release different sizes of the models. So there's a smaller one that fits for smaller computers like laptops, and then there's a bigger one if you've got more RAM. That's what I intend to do. We'll see how easily we can make that happen with something called quantization. Anyway, we're making a lot of progress on that. And if you hear the humming in this recording, there are, I apologize, this is the third time I've mentioned this, but I do have one of the data science servers for this project in my office, and it's the fans are going, and it's not even working hard yet, but it's still pretty loud. So I apologize for that background noise. You're going to hear that for a few months probably on this, if you hear it at all. Maybe you don't hear it. Maybe my editor does a great job like taking that out, noise reduction, but I hear it, and it's going to be here for a few months for sure. Okay, the other thing I have coming up here today is a special report on the Middle East. I was trying to cover the Middle East yesterday, but I just didn't want to, you know, really. And you heard I tried to do a one-minute summary at the end of yesterday's podcast, which may or may not have been effective. So I recorded a special report today. It's a little under 20 minutes that gives a lot more details about what's happening with Hezbollah, Hamas, Israel, the United States, Iran, and so on. Essentially, to summarize it, Israel is trying to kind of pull the U.S. into a much bigger war with Iran in particular, because Israel wants to destroy Iran, but Israel can't do it itself. And so Israel, or Israel, as they say locally, they want to get the United States to do the fighting for them and to destroy Iran for them, thereby allowing Israel to be able to achieve its greater Israel desires, which is a massive expansion of its borders, taking land from Saudi Arabia, from Iraq, from Syria, taking land from Jordan, taking land from Egypt, and especially Lebanon. They really want to take like the southern half of Lebanon, by the way. And, you know, there are, of course, hundreds of millions of Arabs in these lands. And so Israel needs to figure out a way, well, how do we kill all these Arabs, you know? And the answer is let the U.S. bomb them, right? That's pretty much what's going on right now. Or use U.S. bombs, or use nukes and have an excuse for it, like make ourselves the victims. Let's get ourselves really attacked. And then we claim we have to nuke them, you know, something like that. This is what's going on right now. Regardless of how you feel about Israel or the Bible or Zionism or Judaism or whatever, I'm not even talking about, you know, debates on those subjects right now. I'm just saying Israel wants the U.S. to fight its wars in the Middle East, and it's trying to drag the U.S. into one of these wars right now. Maybe the biggest war ever. Maybe it's the Gog versus Magog end game war. I don't know. But that's what they're trying to do. So we're going to get to that special report here in a little bit. Some other news I want to comment on before we get to that. As you know, the Jeffrey Epstein court documents have been released, and those documents mention several names, several prominent names in the documents. For example, you know, Alan Dershowitz is mentioned a few times, but Bill Clinton is mentioned, I think, the most. I do want you to understand that these documents are not Jeffrey Epstein's like secret black book Rolodex. And by the way, they've never released all the videotapes, you know, the blackmail videotapes of people like Bill Clinton, no doubt, you know, doing horrible things to underage girls, right? So what did come out in the documents is essentially testimony from witnesses who say that they heard Bill Clinton, for example, saying that he likes them young, or that Bill Clinton was present. You know, he was there on the island on the flights, the Lolita Express, and he was hanging out and, you know, involved in this whole operation, and other people too, quite a few other prominent people. But I hope that you realize that this is still a massive, massive cover-up. The videos haven't come out, even though it's clear that the FBI probably has these videos. And it's probably tens of thousands of hours of videos, which is the ultimate blackmail. It's like a treasure trove of blackmail for all the most powerful people in government, especially in the United States, but also around the world. And what you need to understand in all of this is that Jeffrey Epstein was a Mossad agent. He worked for Israel intelligence. And the whole point of this was for Jeffrey Epstein to, you know, befriend a lot of powerful people and to run around inviting them to little sex parties with underage children, you know, whatever they wanted. They might ask, oh, do you want little boys or you want little girls? You want boys and girls? What do you want? You want them white? You want them black? You want them Russian? You know, because they've kidnapped children from all over the world. You want brown little boys? Is that what you want? We got them from, you know, South America. Oh, you want black little girls? It's like a menu, you know. You can order cheese pizza, apparently, and get whatever little child you want. And then, of course, it's all filmed. And the video becomes the blackmail. So if you're like a senator or you're a corporate leader or you're a mover and shaker and you agree to this, you're like, oh, yeah, you want to go in and do whatever crazy thing to whatever underage, you know, victim. You go in there and do that. And then Jeffrey Epstein says, hey, I hope you had fun. And by the way, here's the video. Here's a thumb drive. You can have your own copy. And don't worry, we have our copies, too. And now you're going to do everything that Israel wants you to do. You're going to support Israel. You're going to fund Israel. You're never going to speak in opposition to Israel. You got it? So I hope you understand that everything that you are seeing right now in terms of powerful people in the Senate, you know, throughout Congress, in the State Department, in the Biden administration, in the media, you know, even prominent attorneys, prominent tech leaders, corporate CEOs, whatever. The number one reason why they won't criticize Israel at all, even in this mass bombing, is because they're all on video raping children. And they've been given instructions of what to say, what to do, and what not to say, and that's how it works, okay? So that's what Jeffrey Epstein was all about. Well, this little, you know, honeypot sex blackmail thing is so effective that the model was replicated. And I kind of mentioned this yesterday, but I wanted to go through the story today. From the UK Daily Mail, an exclusive story, high-end sex ring in Boston and DC areas was a honeypot scheme by Russia, China, South Korea, or even Israel to ensnare U.S. officials, intelligence experts believe. All right, this is a story published in the UK Daily Mail, January 3rd. It says investigators believe a network of high-end brothels operating in the Boston and D.C. areas was a honey trap to ensnare politicians and government officials. Clients believed to include members of Congress, military officers, national security contractors, have not yet been unmasked and charged. Uh-huh. Well, and they probably never will be. And the story says the mystery is which country was behind the scheme. And they throw out, oh, maybe it was Russia, maybe it was China, maybe it was Korea, or even Israel. That's in the story. Well, who do you think it is? I mean, of course, it's Mossad, because Jeffrey Epstein didn't kill himself. And so he's out of the picture and they need, you know, somebody else to come in and run the operation. And the Boston area brothel locations in this UK Daily Mail article, they show what, four locations, Watertown, Massachusetts, Cambridge. Well, three of them in Cambridge, apparently. It was a very busy, you know, sex trafficking city there, Cambridge, Massachusetts. Let's see. Investigators identified six target locations, four in the Boston area, and three were in a Cambridge apartment complex. Uh-huh. And then in D.C., one was in, Tysons, Virginia, and the other was in Fairfax, Virginia, you know, driving distance from D.C. The story says that the ring's clients who paid rates of up to $600 an hour included corporate executives, professors, lawyers, and scientists, and military professionals with security clearances. So can you imagine? I mean, do you think that video cameras were recording all of these? Of course they were.
It's so obvious. These people, $600 an hour. Is that a high rate or a low rate? I'm thinking that for the East Coast, that seems pretty affordable to a lot of these people. You know, typical attorney would probably bill more than $600 an hour. And so for 1 hour of his work, he gets an hour of, you know, sex with a trafficked person. And then, you know, gets caught on videotape. And then guess how that conversation goes? Oh, hey, Mr. John Doe, that's a really amazing video that we have of you. I bet you don't want this all over, you know, TikTok or whatever. Yeah, I bet you don't want, you know, your wife seeing this or your clients or the New York Times or the Washington Post. So here's what's going to happen from now on. You're going to do this and this and this, and you're going to support this bill. And you're not going to criticize Israel, by the way. And, you know, you're going to do all these things. Otherwise, you know, we release the video. And by the way, you're welcome to come back anytime. It's $600 an hour, and we'll just get more video of you, you know. So come on down. Repeat business. Okay, something else from the story. The high-end brothel network kept detailed records of its customers. I mean, there's a clue. I suppose if you go visit hookers all the time, you don't want hookers that are really good at record-keeping, you know. It would almost be better if they were illiterate, right? If you're a high-powered official, like, you don't want them to be able to write anything. But they did. Detailed records of customers along with millions in cash. There's another clue. And other damning items in bulk. I don't know what that might be. What are damning items in bulk? Like drugs? I don't know. Clientele included, quote, hundreds of elected officials, tech executives, pharmaceutical executives. Oh, yeah, now you know where all that vaccine money is going. A lot of pharma executives are suddenly rolling in cash. And so, you know, they're going out and, you know, banging the, the human trafficking victims here. Lawyers, professors, and military officers, though federal prosecutors did not identify any of them. The story says that the surrounding area is packed with national security giants such as Lockheed Martin, Boeing, and General Dynamics, because, you know, of course, this is all a giant money laundering operation, these wars with Ukraine and now in the Middle East. And so there's all kinds of money in this bubble city, well, the whole area around Washington, D.C. and Virginia. I mean, they're not even living in the real world. They're just getting money to build bombs and then banging hookers and then getting caught on tape. That's what they're doing. The story also says, quote, the most valuable information in Washington and Boston are government secrets. But here's the really freaky part about this, okay? Aspiring clients, according to the article, had to submit a membership application before they could book an appointment. And the required documentation included a government-issued ID, phone and email contacts, employer information, credit card records. I mean, you basically had to apply for a loan in order to, you know, have a sex encounter with one of these sex workers. So basically, you know, all these people in DC and Boston who want to do this, they were submitting all the information, and then somebody in the you know, the sex worker organization was going through and saying, like, who do we want to blackmail? Oh, look, here's this person. You know, they work at wherever. They work at this weapons company. They work at the Pentagon. They work in the, you know, wherever, work in government. And these John Does submitted all this and then showed up. I mean, even from the story, it says, bizarrely, numerous political, military, and business officials provided it all without blinking an eye and proceeded to have sex in an apartment that, for all they knew, was outfitted with equipment to record video and audio footage. Of course, quote, finding idiots like this would be pure gold for an intelligence service running a honeypot. This is at the level of a Nigerian prince scam. It's like, yeah, just give me your ID and access to your bank, and then we can free up the $1 billion that, you know, the Nigerian king has been holding from us, and then we'll split it with you, you know. But again, see, this just tells you, look, our society has fallen so far not only the immorality of just visiting sex workers, prostitutes, or maybe underage prostitutes, even, you know, like trafficked teens or children, who knows what, not only that immorality, but then compromising your nation, you know, giving up government secrets in order to participate in this. That's some sick, twisted stuff. So there was an affidavit in the court documents that included a screenshot of some text messages, which gave a menu, like a menu that you could book an appointment, apparently after you were accepted, you know, if you're sufficiently powerful government or defense industry or, you know, big tech, big pharma executive, whatever, you could, they would text you this menu. See if you can make any sense of this. It says GFE services, 30 minutes is $240. 60 minutes is $340, which says up to two shots. And pretty sure they're not talking about vaccines in this case. And then they have BB services, which I'm trying to imagine what BB means. And it says here BB equals without CD. So, I don't know, is it like Brokeback Mountain? Is it gay sex? BB without CD? I'm like, no background music on a CD? Like, what is this? I don't know the lingo of this world, but apparently BB for 60 minutes costs $540, but GFE for 60 minutes costs $340. So I guess BB is like an upgrade, whatever BB is. What is BB? Bad boy. What, do they slap you? They slap you around? Bad boy. Bondage? Is it like, is it something to do with bondage? Is it, does it have to do with furries? Bunny bondage. I'm imagining that you're wearing a giant furry bunny rabbit suit with like a red ball in your mouth and your hands tied behind your back. That must be BB, right? Bunny bondage. I got it. Okay. Can't wait to see those videos. Can you imagine? Look, it's the big pharma executive in a bunny suit getting slapped on his ass. Oh man, I would pay. I would pay to live stream that. Okay, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. It's just, it's sick, but it's hilarious. Anyway, the point is, in all of this, sadly, this is the way power works in very corrupt societies. So when you abandon morals in your society, and of course, you know, God has no place in Washington, D.C., that's for sure, or, you know, nowhere in the high levels of government, certainly not in the Democrat Party, and not in the weapons industry, in the war industry, in the Pentagon, and all that. I mean, when you abandon the whole culture of morality, and you just appeal to, you know, people's power and pleasure and money, and then, you know, a lot of people transform themselves into that. All they want is just, you know, power, money, and sex. And they're even willing to hand over their government ID to a bunch of hookers and have their name and emails and everything all recorded, and even to be videotaped. Some of these people probably didn't even mind being videotaped. They're so desperate for, I don't know, physical companionship or something. They probably didn't mind it. Some of them probably walked in and was like, yeah, I know you're recording me. I don't care. Let's go. What? But that's what happens when your life is so empty because you're pursuing materialism and power and money and nothing but, you know, greed. Your life is empty. And for a lot of these powerful men in Washington, D.C., no real woman will ever love them, because they're incapable of reciprocating love to another human being. And so they have to pay for the acts of sex, and they're willing to compromise everything in order to achieve that. That's the lowest of the low. That's who's running the highest of the high positions of the United States of America. So if you're asking me, are federal government officials corrupt? Did Fang Fang Bang Swalwell? I mean, the answer is kind of obvious. You know, I just realized, I was trying to figure out what does BB mean on this sex menu. And that's That's the nickname for Netanyahu. It's Bibi Netanyahu. It is. Everybody calls him Bibi,
which I guess is the nickname for Benjamin. I don't know how you say it.
Bibi Netanyahu. So, and Bibi, but it can't mean that. It can't mean like, Israeli style sex encounters. Because no one would pay extra for that, you know. It's got to mean something else. And people, don't text. If you know what that is, don't tell me. I really don't want to know. Don't text me like, Mike, it means this. Oh, God, please, no. And I'm not going to go out and search for that because I don't want that in my, you know, search tracking history either. So it's just going to have to remain a mystery. I'm going with either Bunny Bondage or Big Buns. Could it be Big Buns? You know, maybe they want an encounter with a gal that's got some junk in her trunk. So is it Big Buns? Big Boobs? Big Bod? What? Okay, I shouldn't even go down this road. I don't want to. I'm not going to guess anymore. I don't know. And I don't want to know. Okay, let's move on. Okay, enjoy this report then about war in the Middle East. Now that you know all this crazy, dark, like sex traffic, honeypot, trap scheme that actually underlies, you know, war and geopolitics and power and money and all that other crap. Now, war in the Middle East actually makes a lot more sense, or at least I should say the reaction of America's political and military leaders to that war makes a lot more sense. So check out this special report, and we'll be back on the other side with the full interview that I promised straight ahead. Welcome to the special report update on the situation with Israel, Iran, the Middle East, Hezbollah, Lebanon, you know, the whole deal. I'm Mike Adams. Thank you for joining me today. Now, I know that everybody gets all emotional when it comes to talking about Israel or anything related to the Middle East. So I'm not going to invoke that. This is a top-down strategic theater of war analysis of what has just happened and what the implications are. Might be. And yes, that was a reference to Idiocracy right there with President Camacho. So, the notable events that have just occurred in the last several days, Israel has used a drone strike to assassinate, I believe, two different Hamas leaders, plus some other surrounding personnel, inside of Lebanon. This is designed to absolutely enrage Hezbollah and Nasrallah, who is at the moment trying desperately to keep his troops under control because they're completely outraged and they want to just, you know, bomb Israel right now if they can, or launch missiles. Nasrallah is trying to sort of keep them in line. And we'll get back to that in a second. There was also this huge bombing of this remembrance event in Iran that was remembering Soleimani, who was assassinated by a U.S. drone strike back in, I believe, 2020 under President Trump. And Soleimani was one of the key Iranian military logistics experts who had a big role in sort of readying Hamas for its current war with Israel. Soleimani is the guy who taught Hamas a lot of the things that it has currently achieved, including many techniques of building tunnels, but mostly logistics for weapons supplies and so on. So Trump takes out Soleimani years ago. There's a remembrance event for him. And then there's, well, multiple explosions. The current reports say there were four bombs. I had initially read there were two bombs, but apparently that's four if I'm reading it correctly. Whatever the case, however many bombs it was more than one, and they bombed civilians who were just gathered at the memorial, essentially. And initially, the death reports were over 100. Then I saw a number recently that said there were 70 that died, so it's not clear, but it's a lot of people. It's, let's say, around 100. Now, at first, when that happened, almost everybody in the Middle East blamed Israel. They said this is a Mossad bombing because it's classic Mossad type of behavior.
to try to provoke Iran into a counterattack against maybe U.S. or Israeli military assets. And it was believed, and I believed it too, that this was designed to pull the United States into a war with Iran. But in the hours since, ISIS has publicly claimed responsibility for that bombing. And I'm not sure what to make of it. You know, trying to sort out what's happening in the Middle East is always a nightmare. And you don't even know if ISIS actually did the bombing or if they just want to take credit for it. You know, maybe Mossad did the bombing, but Mossad doesn't want the credit for it. And ISIS says, well, we'll take the credit. You know, it's always difficult to know who's lying, because usually when it comes to violence in the Middle East, usually everybody's lying. But the upshot of this is that Iran, well, the people of Iran are absolutely outraged and, you know, justifiably so for this mass slaughter of innocent people who were just gathered at a memorial. And this is escalating the calls for war. And so what you're actually seeing right now is the officials of Iran and also Hezbollah, and to some extent Turkey as well, all of these officials desperately trying to hold back their armies, their people, their militias, or in the case of Iran, the IRGC, trying to hold back these people and to try to not give the West what the West wants, which in the case of Israel, Israel wants to be attacked in a major way by Iran or Hezbollah, so that the U.S. is compelled to get swept into a greater war in the Middle East, because Israel wants the U.S. to do its fighting for it. You know, Israel by itself is not a very powerful military force in the Middle East. Let's be honest. They don't have a lot of soldiers. The soldiers they do have, especially the reservists, are not that impressive. The one thing they do have is nukes. Everybody knows they have nukes, and frankly, if they didn't have nukes, Israel would have already been overrun at this point. No question about it. It's the nukes that are the deterrent. And Nasrallah knows this in Lebanon. He knows that if Hezbollah were to do a full-scale assault on Israel, which they are capable of doing, that Israel would nuke Beirut and other areas, probably, of Lebanon. And a similar story with Iran. Of course, Iran wants to destroy Israel, but Israel would nuke major cities in Iran. And so that is functioning as a deterrent. But under the cover of that, Israel is provoking an escalation of conflict with all these other countries. And ultimately, that provocation is probably going to stir up some things in Turkey, because, you know, Turkey is like 96% Muslim, maybe 98%. And Turkey, even though it's a NATO member, you know, eventually even Erdogan can't hold back the wave of anger from his own people. Now, here's something else you need to know. I was told from a source from Lebanon that Hezbollah does not want to engage Israel yet. That Hezbollah is actually building up its missiles, its military. You know, Hezbollah receives a lot of funding, some of it from Iran, perhaps most of it. Some of it, you know, from Qatar. I'm not sure exactly where all its funding sources are. But Hezbollah needs a couple more years in order to really build up its weapons base. And once it has that, it plans to attack Israel and to even just destroy Israel. And Hezbollah also has tunnels, an extensive tunnel network that goes underneath the border, you know, southern Lebanon border and northern Israel border. That tunnel network will be used as part of the eventual invasion or attack on Israel from Hezbollah. So the tunnels aren't just in Gaza, and it doesn't involve just Hamas. And remember that Hamas and Hezbollah don't necessarily get along. And in fact, Hamas, by attacking Israel on October 7th, which was also a provoked attack, Hamas kind of screwed up Hezbollah's timeline. Hezbollah didn't want to be engaging with Israel yet. They wanted more time, but they're kind of forced into this situation at the moment prematurely before they're fully ready to wage full-scale war with Israel. Now, all these Arab countries, and even Persia, Iran, they all say to themselves, and they all know that Israel, and this is from their point of view, that Israel has got to go, that Israel cannot be allowed to continue to exist in the Middle East because Israel is incompatible with peace in the entire region. So they all, in their minds, they have a plan to completely obliterate Israel. Iran, for example, you know, former, you know, Ayatollahs and so on have talked about nuking Israel, that as soon as Iran gets nuclear weapons, they're going to nuke Tel Aviv and wipe Israel off the map. There have been repeated threats of that. And of course, Hezbollah, which does not have nukes, not that we know of, not at the moment, they plan to overrun Israel through conventional means, you know, rockets and missiles and men and anti-tank weapons and things like that. But Israel depends on the U.S. Navy in particular to come to its defense. Israel cannot defend itself against these other Arab nations and Iran because the advancement of weapons technology has been so rapid in places like Iran and also in Turkey, which is actually building its own, you know, fifth generation fighter, that these weapon systems are now eclipsing the weapons of the West. So 20 years ago, the United States and Israel had a really strong advantage on weapon systems and, you know, naval presence and so on. Today, that's not the case. Today, the balance of weapon superiority is no longer strongly in the West's favor. But one of the things we all witnessed during the war in Ukraine is that the West no longer has the military dominance that it once possessed. In other words, you know, the U.S. was just defeated by Russia in Ukraine. I mean, there were U.S. personnel, U.S. weapon systems like HIMARS and so on, U.S. satellites, U.S. intelligence, U.S. analysis, U.S. training, U.S. targeting systems, you know, U.S. satellite imagery, whatever. And it wasn't enough. And there were German tanks, you know, the Leopards. And by the way, all the Leopards have been destroyed. They're damaged or destroyed, in other words. So, you know, the very best weapon systems of the West are no longer enough to, you know, to have dominance over the battlefield. And the Middle Eastern nations have no doubt taken note of this very important dynamic. They realize this. They know what's happening. They know that the West can now be defeated in ways that were not possible 20 years ago, or certainly 30 years ago during Desert Storm. The U.S. Navy in particular is a lot more vulnerable today because of anti-ship missile systems. And those missile systems are possessed by Hezbollah, by the way, as well as, of course, Iran. But even Hezbollah can take out U.S. naval ships. And my prediction is that the next escalation you're going to see in this war, and very likely, by the way, this might be the intention of the United States, is to put out a bunch of naval vessels as bait, hoping for one of them to be severely damaged or even sunk, so that the U.S. can then declare a much wider war and can get public support for, you know, bombing Iran, for example. And so Iran's game in this, its leaders have no doubt figured this out. The only way they win is to not respond to the provocations, to not escalate, to not attack naval ships, and instead to allow the passage of time to continue to weaken America, which is exactly what's happening, especially in terms of the dollar, you know, global de-dollarization, the rise of BRICS nations, and the collapsing U.S. currency. So, you know, in 6 months, most of the world will be trading
in non-dollar denominated currencies. That dynamic is already well underway with BRICS nations or BRICS plus nations, including the Saudis at this point. And the U.S. is just losing dollar dominance. At the same time, the U.S. is falling further and further behind in military technology because there's so much corruption in the military-industrial complex in the United States, so much incompetence, so much wokeism, that the U.S. as a nation is now incapable of innovating effective new weapon systems. It's just incapable. Can't build hypersonic missiles that work, you know, can't build new aircraft carriers that function worth a damn. I mean, the USS Ford is plagued with problems. I mean, the elevators didn't work for 6 months on that thing. You know, cost overruns galore. And not to mention, you know, the F-35, which is basically just a flying electronic countermeasure target that can be brought out of the sky at any moment by Russian electronic warfare, by the way. And that's when the F-35 is even able to fly and when it can even get spare parts. The bottom line is, time will defeat the U.S. empire while all the other nations of the world become more technologically advanced and more economically capable. I mean, Russia's economy is stronger than ever. China is building up a massive navy. Iran continues to innovate weapon systems. Turkey is innovating a lot more very high-tech weapon systems. And by the way, you know, autonomous drones that are just light years more advanced than anything the U.S. has ever come up with. And Iran is building drones as well. So the U.S. and Israel are trying to circumvent the passage of time by bombing or provoking or false flagging nations like Iran and Lebanon. Whereas the leaders of Hezbollah or the leaders of Turkey or the leaders of Iran, they have to try to not be provoked into this escalation. And that's the dynamic. So you're going to see more Israeli attacks. Now, maybe ISIS did this most recent bombing in Iran, but you're going to see Mossad carry out a lot more sabotage. You're going to see the U.S. attempt to provoke. You're going to see drone strikes against more Hezbollah leaders and Hamas leaders and potentially, you know, Iranian leaders. You're going to see Mossad assassinations of Iranian scientists and physicists, probably, and industry leaders and politicians and so on. This is all part of the provocation pattern. Now, with that said, should the provocations succeed, and should the entire Middle Eastern region erupt into more war, should Iran be swept up into it, which let's hope that doesn't happen. But if it does happen, the implications for the United States are quite severe. First of all, some significant portion of the world's energy exports make their way through the Strait of Hormuz. The Strait of Hormuz is located right there, kind of like the southwestern portion of Iran. And Iran, of course, has complete control over the Strait of Hormuz. Iran could deny any ship a passage through that strait. And what that means is that at its choice, Iran can shut down both liquid natural gas exports and oil exports to both Europe and the United States or anywhere it wants. So what you're seeing with the Houthis in the Red Sea right now, which is the targeting of cargo vessels for drone strikes and some sort of simple low-tech rocket strikes, you could see that in spades if Iran decides to essentially blockade the Strait of Hormuz and block the shipment of energy out of that region. Now, that would, of course, anger very much many of the other nations there, the other Arab nations. You know, the Saudis wouldn't want to go along with that, and Qatar probably wouldn't either, and Iraq probably, I would imagine, isn't on board with that, and Kuwait, and so on. So, you know, the conflict gets very, very complex, but Iran does have the capability of blocking off the Strait of Hormuz or harassing transport vessels, thereby disrupting the world's energy supply. So one of the things that we should all anticipate in the United States and Western Europe, wherever you're listening, we should anticipate energy supply chain shortages and significant price increases in energy prices.
Now, that will, of course, have a devastating impact on Western economies. So as energy prices go up, then, of course, you know, food prices go up, transport prices go up, consumer goods, all of it. Everything becomes more expensive. This will lead to more inflation. So a lot more people will notice that it's costing a lot more money to buy food and so on, even way beyond what it currently is. And you might say, you might realize that, hey, this is going to be bad for Biden's reelection. And indeed, it would be. And that's why there is an element inside the Biden administration that does not want war in the Middle East. That element is currently fighting with the pro-war element, you know, the John Boltons and so on, the Lindsey Grahams, some of the neocons and so on, who want war at any cost, no matter what. So you could even say there's kind of a civil war inside the Biden administration about whether to go to war with Iran. And you hear the voices like, you know, Lindsey Graham saying it's time to bomb Iran, bomb Iran. And he's singing the songs and everything. Whereas a lot of other people are like, no, you know, pull out of the Middle East because we're losing the Muslim vote, which is exactly what's happening. The Democrats have lost the Muslim vote because of the support for Israel's bombing of Gaza. Right? So again, this gets very, very complex. Now, the money is in war. The money is in war. I mean, the military-industrial complex makes so much money, and they have bribes and payoffs and kickbacks and, oh, we're going to fund your child's, you know, think tank, whatever. They do that to all the senators. So there's a lot of money in war. So if we go into a war, yeah, you know, thousands of Americans will die probably, but you think Lindsey Graham gives a crap about that? No, of course not. These senators are going to make a lot of money because war bankrolls, you know, the military-industrial complex. So if we go to war, that bankrolling will be contingent upon more money printing. That's right. Trillions of dollars in new money will have to be printed in order to fund that war. And that money printing will cause more inflation or dollar devaluation, and it will only accelerate the rest of the world moving away from the dollar and choosing BRICS currencies. So the faster the U.S. provokes war and goes to war, the faster the dollar gets abandoned by the rest of the world. And the bottom line translation of this is that the U.S. dollar will be the casualty of the escalation of war in the Middle East. And as the U.S. dollar becomes more and more of a casualty, it means gold and silver will skyrocket probably in price denominated in dollars because the dollar is getting weaker. So the bottom line here, gold and silver will probably fall if there's peace in the Middle East. Gold and silver will probably rise if there's war in the Middle East. Energy will get a lot more expensive if there's an escalation of war in the Middle East. And there are very powerful elements inside the United States government, including the State Department, that are pushing aggressively for more war in the Middle East, plus the entire military-industrial complex and the entire woke military leadership, which is incompetent, but, you know, they want war so they can be more important. So right now, if I were to have to bet on this, I would bet that the war provocateurs are going to succeed. They're going to get the war they want. And we're going to be thrust into a major escalation of war in the Middle East, which eventually will involve Russia. Russia will be forced to respond to defend Iran and perhaps China, but most definitely Russia, because Russia is, you know, not far away, right there. And Russia has many, many interests, you know, trade interests and so on, and strategic interests with Iran and energy interests. So this will pull Russia into the war, and Russia will probably end up using, you know, Kinzhal hypersonic missiles to sink U.S. naval vessels, and then it's on. And then who knows at what point nukes start to fly. So we need to be prepared for this. We need to be prepared for the rapid collapse of the dollar, the rapid hiking of energy prices, and also the rapid escalation of war in the region. So some of the things that we can look at, of course, gold and silver. If you want gold and silver coins, my sponsor in that space is the Treasure Island Coins and Precious Metals Company. You can reach them at metalswithmike.com. I do not earn a percentage on those purchases, and they have very good pricing. If you also want to look at goldbacks, these are the divisible, beautiful bills with gold embedded in the bills. And my affiliate website on that, where I do earn a small commission at no cost to you, is verifiedgoldbacks.com. Even though you already have gold and silver, probably, I think it's a good idea to have goldbacks on hand, because goldbacks are instantly divisible and usable at very small denominations. You know, even in a grid down situation, even in a cyber attack, even if the banking system fails, you can take out goldbacks and you can use them to purchase everyday things, because they're such small, precise denominations. So that's something to consider. Also, don't forget about your backup satellite communications. Our sponsor is the Satellite Phone Store, SAT123.com. You know, check your food supplies, check your medical supplies, check your backup antibiotics. You know, make sure you're squared away on all these areas. Make sure you've got comms. Make sure you have, you know, garden seeds and everything that you need to be prepared for more chaos, because that's probably the direction in which this is headed. So thank you for listening. Mike Adams here, naturalnews.com and brighteon.com. Take care. From time to time, we all experience amazing voices of humanity, voices of courage and truth that tend to just shock people awake to what's happening around the world. And we are honored today here at brighteon.com to be joined by one of those voices, an extraordinary woman. Her name is Laura Abele, and she gave a speech, it was, I think, a couple of months ago, at an event that just shocked the world with her honesty, just the raw truth about what the plan is for humanity on our planet, the plan by those who are really anti-human and what they want to do to us. And she joins us today to give us more details about what that plan actually is and how we can thrive despite those anti-human agendas. So welcome, Laura Abele. It's an honor to have you on today. Thank you for joining me.
Hello, Mike. It's really great to join you tonight. Thank you very much for having me.
The honor's all mine. I'm just very, very pleased to have you here. And I was so stunned by your speech. I don't even know where to begin, but how about this? You were speaking at an event, and let me just ask you, what was that event and what was the essence of your speech and what was the reaction to it?
Well, the event was held by the World Council for Health. It was called the Better Way Conference. It's a really incredible group of people that got together, a lot of doctors back at the time when the pandemic started to really hit and attack all of our civil rights and freedoms. And they were also becoming very aware a lot of the protocols that were being followed were not really what they thought it should be. And so this group of people got together to try to counteract that. And they created this World Council for Health, which is a really great organization. And they've been holding this conference every year in Bath in the UK. And I was fortunate enough to be invited to talk and present on the topic of transhumanism. There were a number of panels, and they wanted me to touch on that very important topic, which I think is something that people really need to become increasingly aware of, the push towards this post-human future. And so I spoke from the heart. I gave this speech telling people, making people aware, not just of the forward trajectory of what is in store for us if we don't stop it, but also the way that they had already pushed us to a very poor psychological condition that humanity is in, and how all of it is really part of this agenda to make us feel so weak, so helpless, so hopeless, that we would consider becoming something other than humans as a means of surviving the future, which is really the concept behind the transhumanists. So that was really the speech, and it went viral, and here we are. I'm talking to you, Mike. So,
well, I'm honored to have you on today, and that speech really moved me. And it did so for a great many people as well. And look, I was not familiar with your work before that speech. So let me ask you, even just the way you're speaking right now shows that you have a real depth of understanding of the dynamics of what globalists are trying to do to humanity. How did you get to this point? What is your background
that led you to this. And I'll also mention your website, lauraaboli.com. That's A-B-O-L-I, lauraaboli.com, for people who want to follow your work on your site. But go ahead and give us your background and how you got to this, please.
So my professional background, in the year 2000, I co-founded a company called WorldCheck, which was basically the first global database of heightened risk individuals. So we collected information and created very highly structured profiles on people of concern. We were pretty much selling our information to the financial institutions around the world, law enforcement as well. And we became really the de facto in the industry for any KYC or due diligence requirements. And so that really taught me how to research. It taught me how to basically connect the dots, right? Of trying to work out what the bigger picture is. And this is what is very critical at the moment. It is very difficult to understand the goal when you cannot see from a distance how all of the pieces of the puzzle fit into one another to create the picture that they're trying to create for us as this dystopian reality that I speak of. So my background really helped me in that respect, in being able to question things and in being able to research. I had worked in the financial industry supplying this information. And so that's where I come from. Now, what I do right now, because I sold that business already quite a few years ago, what I do right now really very much started at the beginning of the pandemic. And it started because I was very aware of what the plan was with the pandemic and how it was all about the vaccine. And I really tried to make people aware of this and make them question things, because this experimental therapy that was being pushed upon humanity was something that I was very, very concerned about. So that was the reason why I started talking, and I created a channel, and one thing led to another. But it's more of a personal mission of just feeling useful at this time, Mike. This is not a business for me. I really do it to feel useful and to be of service to humanity at a time where I think humanity is very much under attack from every angle.
Well, I think our audience completely agrees with you on that point. But then I would imagine you must have received a lot of pushback, a lot of censorship, probably a fair amount of defamation and so on. I mean, anyone who questioned the safety and efficacy of vaccines got that pushback. How much of that did you experience?
Well, I guess I was lucky in that I knew it was going to come. And so I chose Telegram as my first social platform because the censorship in Telegram was very, very low, if any. And so I really felt free to say whatever I wanted to say and needed to say, whereas others that had maybe started before me and had created already quite a following in platforms like YouTube or Instagram were really being slaughtered through censorship. People were losing all of the subscribers that they had built up through years. And so I was lucky that I started with really no expectations and no anticipation of what has come to be right now where I stand. And I was just feeling quite free to say whatever I wanted on Telegram, and slowly but surely my subscribers grew, and then one thing led to another. But I think apart from the censorship that all of us have had to endure in social platforms, I think one of the hardest things, perhaps during the pandemic and the first few years of that, was very much the backlash from friends and from people that
love,
and from anybody that actually, you know, was just too scared to face the prospect of anyone bringing to them a different angle, a different perspective, a different narrative, you know.
Yes.
And a lot of pushback and a lot of heartache that came from that. And I think, I'm sure you did it. I definitely did. I lost a few friends just out of being able or actually speaking my mind at the time. They couldn't take it.
Yes.
Luckily now, I feel like we've somehow reached a point where even those that are maybe completely unaware of what is truly happening are more receptive of someone coming to them from a different angle. And so the pushback I feel is somewhat a little less, which is really nice, because those of us that put up with it from the beginning, it was quite painful. It was painful.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think the globalist plan involves the fracturing of families, cultures, and nations. It is an anti-human plan. In fact, I want to ask you where you think this is going. But first, let me give out your Telegram channel. I think you said it's Laura Abeli Channel is your name on Telegram. Is that right?
That's right.
Okay.
That's
okay. Right. Fantastic. And then speaking of nations, I think you told me in the pre-show that you're from Spain. Is that correct?
Yes, I'm Spanish. I was born in Madrid.
Oh, in Madrid.
Not.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Most people don't realize that I'm Spanish because I had an English education all my life. I've lived in the UK for many years. I was married to an Englishman, and so I'm very mixed in that way. But actually, I was born in Madrid. My parents are Spanish, so very proud of that, actually. It's a wonderful country.
Oh, yeah. Madrid was the first city I visited in Spain and many, many years ago. But we did a tour of castles actually throughout Europe. And anyway, but that's beside the point. But I think it's interesting that the way you speak in your international perspective also, you know, it's interesting. It's something cultural in the United States where Americans tend to, I don't know how to say this, they grant extra authority to people who speak with a European type of pronunciation or dialect of English. And for example, being British, you know, the way British speak, as an American, Americans are mesmerized by, you know, the way British speak. Like, well, that person must know what they're talking about. They're talking like the Queen or something, you know? And the way you talk, which is a beautiful pronunciation, I'm not putting it down at all, but I think it also lends an international perspective to your voice, to your words. And I think a lot of Americans watching that were saying, wow, this is great that this woman, wherever she may be from, shares our views here as well. So thank you for offering that more international perspective in your talks.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much for that. I think, you know, Mike, I think that to a very large degree, the world, as much as it is very divided, because that was part of the plan, you know, you need to divide your enemy before you attack. And they needed to basically break us. They broke our spirit, or they're trying to break our spirit, or they've been trying to do so for decades. But I think at the moment, there is a very strong connection between a lot of us that are beginning to see through the veil of deception. And that makes it very special when somebody speaks from wherever they are in the world, the sentiments, the feelings, the passion behind wanting to raise awareness to certain issues and really unite as a front, as a human front against what these globalists are trying to implement is truly magical. And so that has been the other side of the coin to that pushback that I was speaking about just a few minutes ago, from people that really the cognitive dissonance is just so strong. They just can't deal with it, and they just push you away. But in contrast to that, there is this wonderful connection amongst many of us from all over the world, from all classes and races and religions, that we are united in this quest and this pursuit of the our freedom and of standing up to these globalists to defend humanity and what humanity means. This is truly something very special that is happening as we speak.
Well, I completely agree with you. And you know, you coming on the show today, I think, is part of that. And I think our audience knows that you are driven by passion and love for humanity. That's absolutely what drives me as well. And also, I think God granting us the resources and support in order to do this. You know, God loves life. God grants us all life. And if we love God, we must defend life. And yet the forces that are arrayed against us, the anti-human forces, where do you think that they are going with this? I mean, if they succeed in their agenda of transhumanism, what does that look like if we don't stop this?
Well, it looks pretty awful, to be honest with you. That's the reality. If they get away with their plans, now I'm positive and I'm hopeful that they won't make it. They won't. We won't get there. But the future, according to them, is this global totalitarian reality where transhumanism is a very big part, because what they're trying to do is really, and they're coming at us from many angles, but there are three vertices or three angles that they're coming at us right now as we speak that is very important for people to become aware of. Now, if you want to create this global totalitarian state, this one world government that they've been speaking of for decades, actually, and that they have been working towards for decades and actually implemented a lot of the structure that they are going to require for that to become a reality. There are three aspects that they need to achieve. They need to break or destroy sovereign nations.
Yes.
They need to destroy our financial independence. And they need to destroy our physical sovereignty as well. And that's where transhumanism comes into play. Now, the first one that I mentioned, just destroying nation sovereignty, that's going to be done through the WHO's new treaty pandemic. And that is happening as we speak. I believe the next meeting is in May 2024. Now that if all member states, and that's 194 nations, that's the entire world. If that gets signed, that pretty much grants the WHO the power to declare a crisis or an emergency, a health emergency, at their whim. And what they have done in this treaty is that they've really made it very vague as to when and how they would be entitled to declare this crisis.
Exactly.
Things even like climate change or CO2 levels could grant them the right to declare a crisis. And the problem when they do that is that they then become the dictators of all mandates, all regulations, forced vaccinations, whatever that may be, amongst all the members of the WHO. So in contrast to what happened during the pandemic, where the WHO was releasing recommendations, as it were, they will now become rules and regulations. These are not recommendations anymore. Under the new treaty, they would become pretty much law.
Yes.
So all the nations would have to follow that. They have also included that they have the right to censorship. So all information relating to health will be dealt by the WHO, which means there will be no debate, which means there will be no science, which means there will be no democracy.
That's right.
And be also no recourse for any of the member states to actually oppose any of the rules, mandates, regulations, whatever the WHO dictates. So pretty much, by the signing of this treaty, if it does happen, we will be granting our national sovereignty to the WHO.
Extraordinary. So that's
one very main way that they're coming at us that really people need to become aware and push back in a major, major way. The second way that they are coming at us is this financial attack on all of us. And when you think of the WEF's famous, "You Will Own Nothing," I recently came across a book. I don't know whether you're aware, Mike, but there's a man called David Rogers Webb that released
The Great Taking.
The Great Taking. And as you know, The Great Taking very much describes in a quite detailed manner exactly how they're going to pull off the greatest theft in human history. And this guy really knows what he's talking about. He used to be the head of a very large investment fund. He's been in the financial system for a very long time, and he became aware of some of the shenanigans that were taking place. He became suspicious of some of the things that were happening. And in this book, which he has released for free, he describes exactly how this is going to happen.
Yes.
So it really brings it to the forefront, this concept that we've had of, oh, you will own nothing. Well, we didn't really know how they were going to go about that, right? And we, you know, could suspect, oh, well, they're going to be destroying certain industries with the pretense of this whole climate crisis. We know they've been attacking farmers and the whole reconversion of a lot of industries because of climate change and et cetera, et cetera. But actually, this man describes the exact mechanism, and it's a legal construct that they've created in order to really steal basically all the collateral, which is, I mean, it's shocking.
Importantly, I'm really glad you brought that up, because what Mr. Webb talks about also is that the construct for this has already been put in place, and that even right now, for those of you watching, if you think you own the stocks in your portfolio at your stockbroker, you do not own them. If you think you own the money in your bank account, checking account, savings account, corporate account, you don't own it at all. This is already done. And if you ever had a loan on your house or a loan on your car, even though you paid it off, the original lender still appears on the lien section of the titles of those assets. And those are still used as collateral by those financial institutions, which means they can claim them and take them from you, even though you've paid them off. I mean, these are the kinds of things that David Webb talks about. And it also freaked me out when...
Yeah, it's insane, Mike. It's insane. But when you see it in black and white described like he has described it, and the book is full of sightings. I mean, it's factual. You can follow the links. You can follow the information that he's presenting. And the legal construct is there. It's already been put in place. He describes how they very painstakingly and slowly did it throughout the 50 states in the U.S., for example. And so instead of doing it at federal level that would have attracted more attention, they slowly but surely changed legislation to do with bankruptcy laws and property rights in every single state. So like you say, people believe they own things. Well, they don't.
But it's also very clear, Laura, that then the excuse to trigger all of this can simply be, oh, it was a cyber attack from Russia. Or the new one that I'm imagining now is they will say it's a cyber attack based on AI. So then it's not anybody, no person is at fault. It's an AI system. It got out of control. Maybe it's from North Korea originally or something. I mean, you can imagine the narratives. People in the streets, all our money disappeared. Oh, you know, the government will say, well, it was a cyber attack from an AI system. There's nothing we could have done. Sorry, you lost all your assets. I mean, I can see this happening. People waking up one day and owning nothing. It's the promise from the WEF. You will own nothing. I'm not sure how you will be happy. You will own nothing. You'll probably be very angry, but you will definitely own nothing if you don't take steps about this.
Well, this is the thing, Mike. It's an insane plan, but the scary part, of course, like David Rogers explains in his book, is that the structure is in place. What is needed is the trigger. And like you rightly say, I believe too that a cyber attack is probably the easiest way to make that happen. They yes. just need something to make the financial system collapse, which is what they want to happen. This is how the Great Reset comes into being. But this collapse, they have made sure to put in place all the structures, legal and financial, to make sure that when the shit hits the fan, and sorry for the, they are going to be the ones taking everything off the table. So it is important that the message comes through, because there are a lot of participants in the financial system, very sophisticated investors that are actually completely unaware of this.
Yes.
And we need of the legal professionals, and we need of the financial professionals to become aware of this and for themselves to say, holy cow, I have some of those assets that are actually being used by others as collateral, that if ultimately this goes down the drain, I am actually not the legal owner of my assets. And that's where this deception came to be. They created a legal construct where property rights were really severed, and they divided into what you could call the beneficial ownership and the legal ownership. So we are beneficial owners. We falsely believe that we actually own our assets fully or absolutely, but that is not the case. We are the beneficial owners, which means that you benefit from the dividends that they might pay, and you can trade, you can sell, and you can buy your asset. But in the case of an insolvency of your custodian, your bank, your brokerage, you have no right over your asset, which means that your asset is not actually absolutely yours. David Rogers explains in his book, he gives a very easy example, perhaps for people to understand. He says, you can go to a car dealership and buy a car. You pay for the car fully. No debt, no loan. You pay for the car. You take your car. You go off with your car. You think you own your car. Well, it turns out that your car dealership or the car dealership where you bought that car from is using that car that you bought as collateral for their own debt, which means that if the car dealership should become insolvent, the creditor is the one that actually owns your car. Right. So this is like, boom, like what? You know, I've paid for my car is mine, but it actually turns out that you are actually not the legal owner of that asset.
Well, this is the importance of, you know, self-custody of assets that I call off-grid assets, you know, gold and silver and, you know, things where, you know, there's not a title to the gold coins you might have, for example, or even, you know, privacy crypto, for example, can play a role in this as well. And if you can own things free and clear and get liens removed, that can be one layer of insulation against this. But I want to ask you about the third point, because you've only covered two out of the three, and I know you have a third point, but I want to ask you real quick, do you have a background in law or writing? Because you have a very structured, you know, detailed understanding of these concepts.
No, I don't. I definitely don't have any background in law. I think, you know, I'm actually quite a creative person. I come from a very artistic family.
Oh.
I'm a designer as well, but I think I just have an interest in finding out how things work. That's my just natural curiosity. And at this time when, as I said earlier, I think humanity is at stake here. You know, you just really have to inform yourself. If there's one thing that will get us really fast to that dystopian future is hiding the head in the sand. And now I know that the things that we're talking about, Mike, are really scary, but I'm not about, you know, feeding fear at all. But unless we face things for what they are, and we face them now before it's too late, we are not going to be able to do anything about it. So hiding the head in the sand saying, oh, I don't want to know about what this woman is talking about. It's just too scary. It's too horrific. Well, that's not going to stop it. That's not going to help. It's not going to help anybody. So it's important that we just let fear aside for a moment, become aware of really how they are planning to get to that global totalitarian reality that we definitely do not wish to get to, and propagate this information, get other people that perhaps are in a better position than you and I to actually do something about it. Because all I can do right now is make people aware. Now, individually, when you understand this this information, you might be able, like you say, to perhaps buy physical gold, or if you can pay off your mortgage, if you have that privileged situation to be able to do that, well, that would be a good thing. Or if you're thinking of buying something, well, maybe you should buy land. There are assets that you can hold in your name, of course, that would be a safe haven, as it were, in the case of this total collapse. Now, let's hope and let's pray that we don't get there. But when you look at how much they've done already in preparation for that, when you look at the fact that they keep talking about a great reset, you know, whenever you reset something, first you need to unplug it. You need to destroy what you're doing in order to bring forth that reset. So it is not crazy to think that they might actually trigger this total collapse. Mm-hmm. I really hope not. But the way that I look at this, our best chance to making sure that that doesn't happen is to talk about it, not to hide our head in the sand.
Good point.
You know, that's how I see it.
Okay. And I still want you to answer the third point, please. I'm sorry to keep interrupting you, but I also want to give you a chance to describe the organization that you formed that's working towards global democracy. You want to give us a little bit on that?
Well, I started a movement back in 2021, I think, pretty much just out of my own frustration at watching people accept the loss of their rights and their freedoms, just because we were being fed so much fear 24/7 through the mainstream media with regards to this virus. And, you know, everybody was just complying to the madness. Complying to the madness. And so because I have a bit of a rebel spirit, as you can tell, and I was becoming very frustrated and very concerned, especially as I mentioned earlier with regards to the vaccines, I said to myself, what can I do? And actually, it's a bit of a funny story, because at the time I was just meditating, and I asked God, I said, God, I want to be able to do something, but, you know, what can I do? It's just me against this global horrific plan to take over humanity, right? And so I went into meditation, and when I was very much into the whole thing and having asked God what is it that I could do, all I could see were these letters, like this. It was like an acronym for something. I didn't know what it was, no idea what it meant. But eventually I decided that these letters were UDIMAF. They meant nothing to me. I did a lot of research online to see whether God was trying to, you know, send me some message, work it out. And then I said, well, maybe he was trying to tell me what it is that I needed to do. And so the acronym became in my head suddenly, very, very quickly, this United Democratic International Movement for Awareness and Freedom. And really, that is what I'm all about. It's about bringing awareness so that we don't lose our freedom. And it's the only way, like I was saying, it's really sharing the information that empowers people to make better choices. That is the only way that we can actually turn this around. And making more and more people that perhaps are in a position to actually affect change, right? You know, we can all do what we can do within our capacity and within our condition, within our lives. And this is what I decided to do. And so when you start a movement, it's a bit like, well, it's only me, you know, how do I go about getting more people on board? And that's when I became more active on social media, just trying to spread the word and trying to just connect with people that somehow resonated with my message and resonated with me and agreed that, you know, the time had come for humanity to stand up, to stop waiting for somebody to come and save us, to stop looking for leaders. How about we lead ourselves for once? How about we take control? How about we take responsibility for ourselves, for our health, for our children, for our future? We can do it. There's a lot of us. There's a hell of a lot more of us than them, as we say, than those that are trying to really subjugate humanity. And that was the spirit in which I started my movement. And it's the spirit in which I continue to fight every day and spread word and communicate. And so, yeah, that's where it all comes from.
I thank God for you and the fact that you're doing this, because, you know, each of us resonates with a different audience. You know, some people, some women only want to hear from other women, for example. Some men resonate more with other, like, stronger male archetypes. And so I think it's a duty of each of us to reach out to those that we can resonate with for whatever reason. And I remember seeing some of the comments about your speech from men, and the comments were, wow, she's willing to tell the truth and not too bad to look at either. It was like men liked to hear this message from you, you know, because of your physical appearance, which is, you know, culturally considered very attractive to, I would think, most men. But that's an asset that you have, that God has given you, that can help empower your message. Even though, you know, you and I, we don't judge people on just on physical appearance or shallow properties of any kind, but it does open doors sometimes. Each of us, you know, my audience tends to be more women than men, by the way, for whatever reason. I don't know why, but I reach wives in my podcast who tell their husbands to listen to my podcast. And I hear this from husbands all the time. It's like, my wife ordered me to hear your podcast, you know, but perhaps you might reach more men with your message and your physical appearance. I don't know, but whatever it is, God wants us to do this. That's my position on that.
Well, we all have our attributes, and I believe that, you know, whatever we are given, we should really make the most of what we have. And I always encourage people to really figure out what it is that they have that is unique. And we are all unique. And so I always encourage people to make a difference in their own lives and to use whatever unique assets they may have to just be someone that can actually have a positive effect around them.
Yes.
I understood quite a few years ago that for whatever the reason, there was something about the way that I communicate that got to people. And it was always in conversation, just normal conversation with friends, that I would speak and I would talk and say what I thought about whatever the case it was that maybe that we were talking about at the time. But they would always say, wow, you know, you can really express yourself in a way that makes people understand the message and it makes people really resonate with what you're saying. And they would always say, you should speak a little more. And at the time, obviously too busy with business and with my family, you know, I have three kids. So I didn't really have the time and I was not in a position to be able to do very much in that respect. But a few years ago when I sold my business and I felt like I had a bit more time in my hands, my kids are growing up, they're not babies anymore. And I thought, well, maybe now is the time to use my voice and to use really my heart, Mike. When I speak, I always speak from the heart. And I think that's what people feel and what comes across.
Absolutely. I mean, that is the connection. When people hear you speak about these topics, they feel the humanity pouring forth. That, hey, here's a person who gets it, that understands why humanity is worth defending and protecting. You know, I mean, you talk about transhumanism and also the anti-human movement. Well, humanity is worth protecting. I mean, we can't be replaced by machines. I know they're trying, you know, the rise of the AI and the transhumanism movement, but those AI systems don't have souls. They don't have hearts. They don't have compassion, empathy, morality, love for each other or their families or fellow human beings. Only human beings have those properties. We are worth fighting for.
Absolutely, Mike. And I think really you've hit the head in the nail. That's one of the messages that I am constantly putting out on my channels. Every morning I write, and every evening, apart from all the information that I put out throughout the day, I always give a positive, inspiring message every morning and every evening, because I think it's good to start and end the day that way. And I think one of the things that I always try to put across is this notion that we are really, truly wonderful beings. You have to understand that for the last however many decades, six decades, the message has always been one of destroying our soul, destroying the concept of who we are. They've made us believe that we are so small, so little, so powerless, that we will, like I said earlier, even consider the possibility of merging with technology to become something other than humans.
Right.
I mean, How do you get an intelligent species like ours to get to that point of demoralization and destabilization and honestly just lack of understanding of who we are, that they would consider becoming something else in order to survive? It's madness. It really is madness.
And you know what goes along with this, Laura? I'm so glad you brought that up, because right now in our world, I mean, you're talking about demoralization, destabilization, but also dehumanization. And I honestly, I don't know your views on what's happening in the Middle East, you know, with Israel and Palestine and so on. But there's something going on that is very disturbing, regardless of where our audience falls on these issues, is that there is a dehumanization, not just in the Middle East, but in other places around the world, other conflicts, where one side says the other side are subhuman animals and that they are not humans and that they are therefore justified in extermination. And this is extremely alarming to me. Because I believe that every human life has value and has gifts, regardless of skin color, ethnicity, religion. This goes for Christians, Muslims, Sikhs, Buddhists. Every person who is a human being has the right to live and is actually tasked with contributing to the improvement of the human condition. And when I see one group label another group as being non-humans, I know we're in trouble. What do you think?
I agree with you entirely, Mike. I think some of the things that we are seeing at the moment are truly horrific. And in precisely as you say, this devaluing of human life and how sacred it is. I think we have forgotten exactly what we were talking about, the fact that we were created by God to become and to be this wonderful, wonderful beings of creation. We are creative ourselves. And when you see people speak of others in those terms and really value life so little that they can just, you know, kill, you know, children one side or the other, I don't care. Like you say, I really don't care. I care for life. I care for humanity. And this is just not the way that we have to. This is not the way that we can behave, full stop. But you've reminded me, actually, going back to transhumanism, of the words of Yuval Noah Harari when he refers to us as hackable animals.
Oh, so right.
This whole psychological brainwashing, this programming of the fact that we are how other transhumanists have referred to us, and this was a horrific article that I read last year or 2 years ago, where they referred to us as ape-brained meat sacks.
Oh, wow.
this was an article in the Telegraph, I believe. And this woman who was a member of the Future of Humanity Institute, which was founded by Nick Bostrom, who was the guy that wrote the Theory of Simulation, which you might be familiar with. Yes. Anyway, this woman was talking about transhumanism because she obviously believes it's the best thing we could do. And the only way that we will survive is by merging with technology. But she referred to us as pretty much as ape-brained meat sacks, so monkey brain sacks of meat. I mean, I cannot think of a more horrific way or a more insulting way of referring to humanity, you see? Yeah. But this conditioning of making us think that we are so much less than we are, so there's no soul. You know, they believe we have no soul. There's no emotion, there is no soul, there is no creation, there is no divinity, there is nothing. We're just this material lump of flesh. I mean, how horrific is that? No Yes. wonder we can go around the world watching these horrific scenes of violence and death and killing, right? You know, this is the concept that we have been indoctrinated, that we are so much less than we are.
Well, and this justifies the globalist extermination agenda, the depopulation, because they say, well, they're not killing humans. You know, and what's weird is that these globalists themselves, they don't even believe that they have souls. I mean, because none of them believe in God. If anything, maybe they worship Lucifer. But they don't think that souls really exist. They don't think that morality exists or even consciousness. They think that consciousness is an illusion that is an emergent property from a complex bioneurological system. And in that, they think themselves as being worthless. And so they project that worthlessness onto those around them. But because they have the power, they're willing to exterminate everybody else in order for themselves to inherit the earth. I mean, this is a twisted demonic philosophy that is ruling our planet right now.
Absolutely. It's a very, like you say, very, very twisted ideology, a very horrific perception of who we are. But, you know, they needed to convince us of that in order for us to go along with their plans. It is only by demoralizing and devaluing the concept of humanity and the concept of life that they might be able to push us to comply with their horrific dystopian plans for a future where we are completely controlled and part of this grid, this internet of bodies or internet of things, where we are just one more of those things that they can control. That's where transhumanism comes into the picture. Right. Once they stripped us from our national sovereignty, once they've stripped us from our financial independence, the next thing is stripping us from our bodily autonomy, right?
Oh, that's your third point, yes.
Yes, that's where the third point comes into the picture. And to quote Yuval Noah Harari again, he says governments need to get under our skin, literally.
Yeah, he does say that.
Yeah, he says the most horrific things. You know, I actually cannot stand the guy, honestly, but I'm almost grateful in the sense that he just really comes out with a plan, you know, and so it's been useful in that sense. But it's horrific, you know, the way that he describes what will become, in his idea, the useless class. So can you see again this psychological drumming of you are nothing, you are an animal, you are hackable, you will become useless? You know, this is this ongoing narrative to make people believe that unless we start implanting technology under our skin, we're just going to be rendered, like he says, useless. And then he goes to say, well, what are we going to do with the useless class? We'll just give them drugs and video games. And he says this.
He does.
These are his literal words, right? So this is when you become very aware of the type of people that are pulling the strings. And, you know, Yuval Noah Harari is a counselor to Klaus Schwab from the WEF, who's one of these people that are really pushing to implement these agendas. Not that he's at the top of the pyramid. Who knows who's up there? But, you know, that's beside the point. What is important is to become aware of the plan and to spread word about it so that more and more of us become advocates for humanity, fighters against that dystopian future, right? And so, like you were saying, we each have our attributes. I may have a way of saying things that maybe resonates for some people. You have a way of putting information out that resonates with others. We need more voices. We need all the voices in the world to stand together, united against this horrific plan. It's important that people stop thinking that this is a conspiracy theory. It is not. It's a fact. All the things that we've been talking about are facts. They're happening as we speak. The WHO new treaty is a fact. The great taking and the way that David Rogers describes it, you know, he lays it all out, all of the legal construct, all the financial mechanisms, they are fact. And the way that transhumanists are talking about the future that they have in mind for us is also something that they're slowly implementing. And I believe the most dangerous aspect of that is the whole genetic manipulation, nanotechnology that is very, very fast coming into the market, right? Yes. So it is important that we take off this stigma of, oh, she's a conspiracy theorist. Oh, no. It isn't. It's not true. It's a fact. Look it up for yourself. I wish it was just a theory. I really do. I wish none of this was actually happening as we speak, but it is. And our only chance, as I said earlier, is for more people to become aware of it so that we can actually do something about it before it's too late.
Wow. Well stated. Your ability to articulate these issues is really extraordinary. That's why I appreciate you so much coming on, and hope we get a chance to talk again at some point as well. Especially about as AI, you know, continues to rise and take over. I'm doing some research into AI, building some tools to empower people based on language models. But I also know how these tools can be used against the people. And that's exactly what's being formulated right now, is to have these powerful corporations control your access to technology and control your life and tell you what to do. That's what's coming. Let me give out your website, though, before we wrap this up. LauraAboli.com. Again, the last name is spelled A-B-O-L-I, LauraAboli.com. And also your Telegram page is Laura Aboli Channel, or that's your channel on Telegram. Is there anything else you want to mention before we wrap this up in terms of how people can follow you?
No, pretty much Telegram is probably the best platform, but I'm also active on Instagram. I share somewhat slightly different content, but they can find me on Instagram, and they can find me on X as well at LauraAboli_X. Okay. And I hope to be doing more interviews like this one with yourself. It's always a pleasure to connect with people that understand what's going on, Mike, that are putting their voice out there like you have for many years now. I value you. A lot of people do. I think anybody that has the courage to stand now and speak about all of these things deserves our credit and our applaud. So good for you, and good for anybody that it really is standing up, to what is going on. And like I say to most people, the change starts with each and every one of us. And if we all do that, if we all start taking control of our own lives and really become responsible for our own health and our own education and our own freedoms, you know, we stand a very big chance of turning this around. There is hope. I actually remain very hopeful that we will not get to that dystopian future. There's a lot of people waking up as we speak, more and more every time. And I really remain hopeful that we won't get there. But as I said earlier, what is important is that we don't hide our head in the sand. We've got to face it. And it's ugly, but it's got to be faced.
I completely agree with you. Thank you for stating that and summarizing that. And I would just add that for all of you watching, you're either on Team Humanity or you're missing the boat. And this is, remember, the globalists want to divide us by religion and skin color or gender or politics. And those are all false divisions. The real battle for the future of our world is about pro-human versus anti-human. That's it. And if you think that humans are worth saving, join Team Humanity. Join the pro-human side, which is what we represent here at Brighttown. It's what Laura represents. If you're a transhumanist and you think that you're going to serve eternity in a machine and you're going to somehow transfer your soul to silicon, good luck with that. I don't think it's going to work out for you. But join Team Humanity. That's what we represent. And Laura, thank you so much for joining me today. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Mike. It's been a pleasure for me too. Anytime.
Okay, fantastic. Thank you. Take care. And a fascinating conversation. I really love talking with intelligent, articulate people who understand the issues. And clearly, Laura has done a lot of research and a lot of thinking about these issues. So feel free to share or repost this interview on any other channel or other platforms as you wish. You have our permission to do so. Brighttown.com is a free speech platform. It's censored heavily almost everywhere. So you'll have to go through some extra hoops to get the word out about this. But this interview will also be posted on rumble.com and BitChute and other platforms to the best of our ability. Thank you for watching today. Thank you for caring about humanity. Join Team Humanity. Share this video. I'm Mike Adams for Brighttown.com. God bless you all. Take care. I'm happy to announce we have our laundry detergent back in stock at healthrangerstore.com. Got it up on my laptop here to show you. Now, you may wonder, like, what's so special about laundry detergent? Well, and we sell it as a pair here, these two, I think it's five-pound boxes. Yeah, 2 5-pound boxes together. Well, check this out. We are meticulous about the ingredients. This has zero abrasives, no lye, no phosphates, no bleach, no dyes, no perfume. Most people's laundry detergent is a toxic stew of garbage. But if you look at our ingredients here, you can go through these ingredients and you can meticulously research these ingredients, as we have done, and you can find out that they're incredibly safe for the environment, safe for you and your skin, and also very effective at cleaning your laundry. You know, a lot of people's laundry detergent is just filled with fragrance chemicals that make their clothes smell better, but it's toxic. You know, all those perfumes, when you perspire, the wetness soaks into your clothes that are soaked in the toxins in the laundry detergent. And then your skin can absorb those toxins, which in many cases with many other products are cancer-causing toxins. That's why we say no synthetic fragrances whatsoever. We want you to be clean, but we also want you to be cancer-free, right? I mean, we don't want to have a product that contributes to your cancer. And so we're very meticulous about the ingredients. This is the laundry detergent that I use, and you know how sensitive I am to artificial fragrance and fabric softeners and all that garbage, which I think is just, you know, poison for consumers, typically what's sold at the main stores out there, you know, the big box stores and so on. If you want to clean up your life, clean up your health habits, it's not enough to just have clean food and clean water. You also need to stop poisoning your laundry. And that means get our laundry detergent, healthrangerstore.com. It's back in stock now. It's been over 6 months since we even had this in stock, and this is not going to last very long because so many people have been waiting for it. It's difficult for us to get this formulation manufactured and made for us and then delivered to us. And I don't know how long, you know, this is going to last. Get some now while you can. We also have, by the way, automatic dishwasher detergent. We have body soap. We have many other home and personal care products at healthrangerstore.com. And in addition to supporting our platform and our message with your purchase, you're also supporting your own health. You're detoxifying your body. You're going to live a cleaner, healthier, longer life because of avoiding exposure to the toxins that are associated with all kinds of horrible things that happen to people. So clean up your laundry. Get the poison out of your clothing, out of your socks, out of your underwear. And this is how you can do it. Laundry detergent, healthrangerstore.com. We formulated it. It's manufactured for us. Finally have it back in stock while supplies last. And then it'll probably be gone for 6 more months. So check it out right now, today, healthrangerstore.com. Thank you for your support.